Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast joins you once again in a very busy week for the Milwaukee Brewers on the field, off the field. Had a nice little stretch of winning that helped maybe lift the spirits of fans a little bit, as well as a couple acquisitions have not quite hit that trading deadline, but we are getting closer and already a couple big acquisitions made by the hometown Milwaukee Brewers. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am the host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. I'm going to be joined shortly by Tom Hodricourt, Brewers Journal Sentinel beat reporter. The Brewers lost on Sunday, so something about those day games just isn't clicking for them. But that was the only setback in a four-game series against the San Francisco Giants. They were able to win the first three games of that series. And when you throw in the National Series, it was a stretch of five wins and six tries, which was pretty sweet for a team that came out of the All-Star break. After losing its first game out of the All-Star break, had lost seven in a row. Things were looking really bleak, but the Brewers have righted the ship, and they are back pushing the Chicago Cubs for first place in the National League Central. They have taken a fairly healthy lead in the wild card race, at least at this point, and they've also made a couple pretty big trades. Joaquin Soria, relief pitcher, formerly of the Chicago White Sox. He's been around the block quite a bit, had a lot of success. I think a lot of people remember him with the Royals. He was with the Rangers at one point, Tigers. He has joined the bullpen. The Brewers trading former first-round draft pick Cody Medeiros as part of a package to acquire Soria and bolster that bullpen, which really looked like it could use a breather, especially in the games preceding that. Corey Knebel had been struggling a little bit. And it is nice to see another arm. Matt Albers is now back off the disabled list, so the bullpen is reinforced here, going into a pretty tough stretch of the season. And then the bigger acquisition was Mike Moustakas, announced on Friday that the team had acquired the third baseman. Very outside the box maneuver, given that they already had a third baseman. They've already got Travis Shaw there at the hot corner. Decision made to move Travis Shaw to second base, a place he had never played in his professional career, and put Moustakas in at third. So you got a lefty slugging bat both at third and second. The Brewers have really struggled to get production out of second base and shortstop, and that definitely looked like an area they were going to try and address, and they did in sort of an outside-the-box way, along with recalling Orlando Arcia, who has, you know, returned and looked pretty decent back at shortstop. He has struggled all year long, so if they could get his bat going, it could be a major boost for the Milwaukee Brewers. We're going to be joined, like I said, by Tom Hodricourt. After that, we'll talk to one of the hottest Milwaukee Brewers on the planet right now. That's Christian Yelich. He is having an incredible run. He got a hit on Sunday to extend his hitting streak to 13 consecutive games. He's been just doing so well at the plate. I mean, he's seeing the ball, hitting for power. He's been driving the ball. The guy is, you know, he hits the ground ball perfectly. He's got some sort of wizardry that enables him to pretty much put the ground balls in play, in position to be a hit just about every single time. And so wanted to talk to him about his All-Star game experience primarily, and as well as a few other things that are interesting. His celebrity doppelganger, Pete Davidson, a comedian who you can see on Saturday Night Live, thought that was interesting to talk about that, something he has talked about a lot. Also, his days as a Miami Marlin, the final year probably before he got traded, was probably writing on the wall that there were going to be a lot of players moved, and he among them. Of course, there was the tragic death of Jose Fernandez that really sort of shifted the arc of the Miami Marlins. Really good interview he did with Barstool Sports, where he is video talking about the death of Fernandez and how that changed the trajectory of the organization. So I asked him about that a little bit. And he hit a home run in the All-Star game, as I'm sure many people know. The All-Star game, the aftermath of that was primarily a discussion about Josh Hader with the insensitive tweets, with the offensive tweets that were unearthed from his teenage years. That definitely became the story, and didn't really talk a lot about the game itself, but Christian Yelich had a very eventful All-Star game. So talk to him about that. But first, let's talk about the state of the Milwaukee Brewers with Tom Hodricourt. And now I am joined by Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can find all his material at jsonline.com. And Tom, the big story in the last few days, outside of the Brewers racking up a few wins here, is the trade for Mike Moustakas, the third baseman from the Kansas City Royals. David Stearns has gone outside the box before. You wrote about that in your column on Sunday. This is really outside the box, signing a third baseman so that your original third baseman can play second base for the first time in his career. What's your reaction to that? Is that thinking? I mean, do you recognize that as pretty creative thinking, or is it a huge risk that they're taking?
Yes to both of those. Yes to both of those. As I wrote, in case, for those who haven't read the column, I wrote, this is not just thinking out of the box. This is having a box on Earth and then going to Mars and doing your thinking. That's how far out of the box you are. But, he's been successful. David Stearns has been successful doing stuff like this. So it's hard to say he shouldn't have done it. Let's see how it works. The moral of this story, JR, is they were willing to try something that's a bit of a gamble to help their offense. People keep talking about, why don't they get a starting pitcher? Why don't they get a starting pitcher? Why don't they get a starting pitcher? Well, their biggest problem, as Stearns is quite aware of, has been scoring runs. I was surprised myself when I looked at the games for my column and found out that in 48% of their games this year, they've scored three or fewer runs. So basically, half the time, they score less than 4 runs. And 4 runs is the magic number. They're like 46-9 when they get 4 runs. And most teams have really good records at 4 runs or above, but they've just been below it too much. So we'll see what happens. They do a lot of shifting, a lot of infield shifting. And so there will be times where their second baseman is kind of a second right fielder, And so a lot of times he won't even be near the bag. But the first time he tries to turn a double play, it's going to be interesting to see how he looks doing it, because that is the biggest issue for any novice middle infielder, because it's doing something in concert with others. It's probably going to be the shortstop, and then you got to throw to first base. It is a little easier now. They don't let runners plow the infielders like they used to with the no contact rule at second base. But that's going to be interesting. He's fairly athletic. He made a nice running over the shoulder catch in center field Saturday night. So let's see. But I don't think any of us can argue that the lineup looks a lot better with Mike Moustakas and Travis Shaw in it.
Definitely, obviously, especially against righties, since they're both lefty sluggers. I guess that's the one thing that jumps out at me from an offensive perspective is they've got guys who can hit from the left-handed side. Obviously, Christian Yelich is white hot right now, hitting everybody. But they maybe, maybe I guess I would have thought they would go after a right-handed bat if they were going to go the slugger route, because it seems like they've struggled so much against left-handed pitchers. But I guess they're not, beggars can't be choosers sort of thing. They're just trying to add another bat to the lineup any way they can.
Yeah, they went for a big one in Machado and didn't get him. And so who else was out there? If the Nationals do the unthinkable and trade Bryce Harper, it's still a left-handed bat. So you just go for the next best bat. And most pitchers are right-handed, so he's going to be more helpful than not. It's way more right-handed pitchers than there are left-handed pitchers,
Oh, that's true.
especially starters. So, but you can bet they're going to see a lot of lefty guys come out of the bullpen from here on, depending on their lineup configuration. Yelich is hitting like 325 against them, so it doesn't really seem to bother him.
Right now, we'll talk about him later. He comes up later in this podcast. I have an interview with him. He's just smoking the ball. He's been crazy good. The other addition the Brewers have made was going to get Joaquin Soria, nice bullpen piece from the White Sox. The part of the trade return was Cody Medeiros, the former first-round draft choice for the Brewers, a lefty himself, who it seems like had kind of worked into a profile as a reliever. He was having a really good year, but he had sort of fallen a little bit below that top-shelf prospect radar. Did you see that price? I saw that trade as pretty even. Did you see that price tag as proper, or do you think the team, maybe has given up a little bit on Cody Medeiros?
Well, yeah, what you said about being projected as a reliever in the big leagues, you hear that a lot with him. And so that definitely lessens your value a little bit as a prospect. And so even though he's left-handed, which the Brewers have not had a ton of good left-handed prospects come up. Yeah, but you got to give up something to get something. It's such a bullpen game, and the way the Brewers run the game, it's really a bullpen game. They rarely let their starter go past 6 innings. So, yeah, it makes them one deep. I know Albers did not pitch well Sunday in San Francisco in his return, but let's give him at least a mulligan there and hope he'll be better next time. But it makes them way deeper in their bullpen. And the way they use, you know, now on a night like if you use like the Hayter Jeffress Knievel formula one night and then the next night they're not available, you can use Albers, Williams, and close with Soria, so no such thing as having too many bullpen arms the way the game is run today. So I predicted, I think, on an MLB Radio Network show for Thursday or Friday that, well, it was before the Soria trade. I said it wouldn't surprise me if they got a reliever, a hitter, and a starting pitcher, just kind of checking all three boxes. We still got 2 days for them to get that starting pitcher. We'll see if they do it. But they got their reliever and they got their bat.
Right. So now I guess the question is, do you see that prediction coming to pass still? Has anything changed? Because it's either starting pitcher or catcher are kind of the two areas that would be left to upgrade, so to speak. Or I mean, they could do another reliever, and I don't know if anybody would be really shocked by that. Do you
Yeah.
imagine this team is going to find a way to get a starting pitcher? Because then, there's fewer and far between those options. It seems like those options are falling off a little bit.
Yeah, and that's why I'm not sure, JR, that they will. They're not the kind of team to do something just to do it. And they did get encouraging news with Zach Davies, trying to get past his shoulder slash back problem he's had. Pitched pretty well for Class A Wisconsin tonight. There was, and when I say pitched well, is nothing hurt. And then he's probably gonna make at least two starts for Colorado Springs. But I do think they believe they'll get him back now soon, and they weren't sure about that a few days ago. Some of the guys you hear, like Matt Harvey, I mean, is how much better would he make them, and what do you have to give up to get him? Zach Wheeler, stuff I read today made it sound like the Mets really don't want to trade him, much less Syndergaard and DeGrom, which I think was never going to happen. There's people in on Chris Archer, but you read that the asking price is really high. He's different because he's controllable for a few years, and the Brewers have had interest in him in the past. So I think they'll look really hard and see what they can do, but I'm not 100% sure that they'll do it. Because I just don't know what the cost will be versus how good the acquisition will be. Like, I think it's going to be interesting to see how much Cole Hamels helps the Cubs, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's yeah. He's struggled so much. I don't know. It seems like I wouldn't have wanted the Brewers to get him, for example. So, feels like that could be a real wild card.
I know they'll look hard, but I don't think they're big on, like if you had a guy who's not better than any of the five guys you're using, what was the point of that other than
Right.
depth?
Yeah, I totally agree. So, back on the field, guys that haven't been traded for, Corey Knebel, the Brewers' closer, I guess, although it didn't seem like that would necessarily be his label, but that's certainly been what he has, that's been the role he has served. Manager Craig Counsell said he's kind of moving away from this true closer sort of arrangement where Corey Knebel is the guy to pitch the ninth. We've seen Knebel struggle. He's also pitched a ninth inning and done very well. Since Craig Counsell has said that, do you think they're going to take him away from high leverage situations altogether and maybe turn to more of a Hayter Jeffress Soria combination for its back end? Or is Corey Knebel still going to see a lot of these big innings, eighth, ninth innings with the game on the line?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question he's going to stay high leverage. But the way the Brewers run their bullpen, sometimes that's the seventh inning,
For
and
sure.
sometimes it's even the sixth inning. When I wrote the other day about somebody blowing a save in the seventh inning, I don't think it was the Brewers. I think it was a team they were playing. Somebody t tweeted me and said, "He didn't blow a save, Tom. That was the seventh inning." Well, I hated to break the rules of baseball to that person, but there are blown saves anytime after the fifth inning if you inherit a lead and give it up. So it doesn't just have to be in the ninth inning. And you can lose a game in the seventh inning just as easy as the ninth inning. It's a point that Counsell makes a lot. So, yeah, it sounds like he wants to use them a little bit more, but I don't see him using them in 8-0 games.
No, I agree with that. Some another player who's been up and down is Orlando Arcia. He's back now, back with the big league club, has shown okay, and obviously having his defense with as badly burned as the Brewers have been without Arcia in the defensive lineup, I just wonder if they're going to leave him there now and not mess with him and send him down to AAA, no matter how poorly he hits. And if he does hit, great. But do you get that sense as well that, okay, Orlando Arcia is the shortstop now. No matter what happens with his bat, we are sticking with him defensively at short.
Yeah, and if he has a tough week, maybe you mix in a Saladino or somebody, you know, to break up consecutive starts or whatever. But, this guy doesn't have to bat, 350, but they would like him to bat 250, mm-hmm. He just saves you so many. I've already seen him make some plays that I'm not sure other guys on their roster would make. And don't you think on nights when Shaw plays second, you'd really want Arcia out there to help him out a little bit?
100%. Absolutely.
So that's my answer.
Yes, that would be my expectation as well. Circling back to the Moustakas trade, the price tag was, I guess, pretty high in a macro sense. You got two guys with major league experience in Brett Phillips and Jorge Lopez, guys who can contribute on the major league level. Brett Phillips, obviously, a very engaging personality. I think everybody in Milwaukee kind of fell in love with him, and he showed some pretty good skills, particularly on defense. It just didn't seem like, with the depth of outfield and with the depth in the bullpen, it didn't seem like Lopez and Phillips had a place on this team this year or next even. Do you see that as well? Or I guess, how do you view the return for the Moustakas trade?
Well, I agree with you that talent-wise, they gave up something. But I'm guessing maybe the bidding was getting kind of brisk on Moustakas once it became apparent that he was on the market. Yeah, I wasn't sure early on that he would be.
Right.
But he was. So I think the bidding was probably kind of brisk, and I think Stearns probably sensed that. But you can trade talent if you have a lot of depth of that talent. And I think we can all say outfield is where the Brewers have had a lot of talent. I mean, look at since the end of last season, they've traded away their three best outfield prospects, Lewis Brinson, Monte Harrison, and now Brett Phillips. Well, how many teams could afford to do that? Well, you can if you acquired Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain on the same day in January and already had Broxton and Braun. And, Thames is really an outfielder now, JR. That's right. Where he plays, Like it or not, people say, well, he's not an outfielder. Well, when he plays, he looks to me like he's an outfielder.
Yeah, he's so, standing out there. Some days it's an adventure, but he's going to be out there quite a bit. Yeah.
So, and Perez can play out there, mm-hmm. They gave up a lot. We're all going to miss Brett Phillips, the person, just one of the most tremendous young men we've ever met. And I wish him well. I hope he goes on and has a really good career. Kansas City will be happy to have him. Jorge Lopez, his value diminished a little bit when he moved from starter to reliever in the minors. I know the airlines are going to miss him. He came up and down six times this year.
That's incredible.
He knows. It's not like the season's over. He came up and down six times in about a half a year.
Yeah.
You know,
Brandon Woodruff as well. Using a lot of airline miles between Springs and Milwaukee.
Yeah. If you're traveling from Colorado Springs to Milwaukee and your navigation breaks, call Jorge Lopez for advice.
For sure.
But I wish him well too. Another tremendous young man. We all know, the battle he's had with his young son's health and while trying to maintain a professional baseball career. Two tremendous individuals. The Royals, I'm sure, already know. They've got some great people as far as their character. And I think they'll probably help. And you know what? They'll get to play more there, JR.
Right.
And so, well, they'll get to find out how good they are.
Brett Phillips has already stolen a home run, or at least made a really nice catch against the Yankees. So he's already paid dividends for the Royals. Pretty crazy.
He'd be good in that big outfield in Kansas City because he can run and he can throw.
Yeah, he's got a cannon. I do wish him well as well. It'll be cool to see those guys get their shot, like you said. Yep. Moving into some final quick hitters here, let's talk a little bit about Ulys Chacin. I mean, David Stearns, and we've seen his moves work out. We know he's a shrewd general manager and has made some really good calls. Did he know something that the rest of the world didn't know about this guy? Or was this just a little bit of luck? Because this Chacin, an under-the-radar signing as from a national perspective, might be the best free agent pitcher out there. I mean, there are other contenders for that. But, man, has he been good, had another phenomenal outing on Saturday.
Yeah, is anybody that is being paid, 7 or 8 million a year, who signed as a free agent last year, doing better than this guy. They're 16-7 when he starts on JR. You know, what do we hear the starting pitchers say more than anything? I just want to give my team a chance to win, keep my team in the game. Well, he does it like almost every time he pitches, you know. And so, it was a shrewd move. You know, they liked his spin rate. You know, we've learned a lot of things that are important in modern baseball, and spin rate's one of them. He's got a good one. You know, he's also death on right-handers with his slider, just death on him. And so, but I give him credit. He's evolving more as a pitcher, even at a little bit of an older age. He's using his changeup more. He throws like a slurve and a curve and a slider, you know, and he's just made himself better. Most times he doesn't hurt himself with walks and stuff. So, yeah, what a great signing. Yeah, I wonder if they're in the wild card one game if he gets the ball, you know.
I think he might. Yeah, that's a really good point. Josh Hader heard from the San Francisco fans, not all out chorus of boos, but he obviously heard some negativity when he checked into the first game of that San Francisco series. Just independent of the, you know, the situation off the field, which is its own conversation. On the field, you would have expected maybe that this would be a struggle for him, and yet the early signs are that he is done well. He pitched well in his outing at home, and then again on the road. So initial return suggests that maybe the Brewers, you know, I don't want to say fortunate because it sort of discounts what's happening off the field and these tweets, but that maybe he isn't going to show any adverse effects, at least on the field.
Right. You know, one thing I've learned about ball players, especially mentally tough ones, is the actual diamond is kind of like a haven for them. Think about Travis Shaw with his young daughter's health last year.
Right.
I'm not comparing health situations to, you know, horrible tweets from a teenager. I'm just saying personal trials and tribulations off the field. Sometimes just being on that diamond is where they feel most comfortable, most natural. And I haven't seen any ill effects from him. Now, this is still very early in that development of that situation. So let's see. You know, he's only been on the road one place. As you noted, he got booed, but it wasn't like, you know, end of the century booing. You know, Ryan Braun probably gets booed more. So let's see. I wouldn't be worried about group booing with him as I would an individual who wants to make a statement in a bad way to him. That's the kind of guy you're going to, you know, the lone wolf person that wants to come and let him know what he thinks. That's probably more of a danger than group booing. So we'll see. It's baby steps for Hader. So far, so good. But this is a tough thing, and it's going to not go away overnight. And so I think we just have to be, we have to say work in progress there, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely, very much. We have not spoken since the team learned that it would be without Brent Suter for the rest of the season with a torn UCL. He's going to need Tommy John surgery, probably gone for a full year. You know, I know nobody's going to think of him as like a top shelf starting pitcher, a guy that they definitely will miss down the stretch as far as dominant innings goes, but it's a huge hit to their depth. And he's obviously become such an engaging personality. I mean, everybody in the clubhouse really seems to love him. Where do you think his loss is going to be felt by this Brewers team?
Yeah, I think everywhere, you know. You know, he was pretty effective for him on the mound. And also, he could do something that few pitchers can do, either start or relieve on a moment's notice and not flinch. Yeah, but man, what a positive clubhouse guy. And a guy, if there's any type of, you know, celebration or rooting for a teammate going on, he's usually right in the middle of it. Willing to make fun of himself, you know, the Dumb and Dumber video. And yeah, I mean, he's such a tremendous person. I hated to even go talk to him about it because I felt so bad for him, because he's the ultimate overachiever, JR. And I told him, I don't really like the phrase "no good deed goes unpunished." I says, but it sure does seem to fit you right now, because he does all good deeds. You know it, and he, but it just shows you how cruel baseball is. And I just wonder what percentage of total pitchers having Tommy John surgery we're up to now. It almost seems like 50% sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. It really does. So, last thing, Christian Yelich, absolutely on fire. We're going to get to my interview with him in a moment. And one of big part of the interview is we didn't even really get to talk about his All-Star game performance, hitting that home run and getting, three at bats because of obviously what happened off the field afterwards. But a true five-tool player. I mean, I don't know if the Brewers have had a guy like this in a while, a guy who can run fast and can go get the ball and has a good enough arm and can hit the ball, power, all of it. I mean, he is just fun to watch. And look, he's risen into the MVP conversation, which is, I guess, kind of a surprise.
Yeah, that it's so interesting to talk about him in that regard, in sort of the evaluation regard, because when the Brewers got him, I heard, oh, you're just not gonna believe how good this guy is, but at the top of the evaluation spectrum. But then I heard some people say, well, he's kind of a complimentary piece. He's not gonna carry you, but it'll just, be a really nice complimentary piece. Well, I'm tending to believe the higher end of the spectrum right now
Yes.
of things I heard. I just wonder if 5 years from now, people are going to look back on the year that Giancarlo Stanton, Marcell Ozuna, and Christian Yelich were all traded from the Miami Marlins outfield, and people are going to say the Brewers got the best guy. You know? Because all those things you noted, Giancarlo Stanton is a tremendous slugger, but he can't do some of the other things that Christian can do. How about how good of a base runner he is? Man, he's a good base runner. And then Ozuna, I mean, has Ozuna made a huge impact in St. Louis this year? That's kind of escaped me as if he has. And so I just think, Yelich is 26. They talked about, hey, we got him in the prime of his career. But man, is he coming. And he's kind of banged up early too, JR. He had a couple of, what, an oblique and then something else.
Right.
And he was just kind of banged up. And you know what? He came out of the All-Star break doing this so much for the All-Star break, wearing you out, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He's been a huge boost. And of course, the Brewers winning 3 of 4 in San Francisco, and Yelich now with a 13 game hitting streak going into the Dodgers series. Tom Haudricourt, once again, you can read him at jsonline.com. He'll get you covered throughout the entire season. Great Brewers coverage. Lots of content there. Thanks again, Tom. We'll catch you again real soon.
All right, JR, thanks.
Thanks to Tom for joining us. Let's switch gears over to Christian Yelich, Brewers All-Star outfielder. An incredible acquisition by David Stearns, general manager in the offseason. He pulled a trade with the Marlins, got him for a number of top minor league prospects, including Monty Harrison, Ezan Diaz, Jordan Yamamoto, and probably the centerpiece of the deal, Lewis Brinson, the team's number one prospect at the time. But it looks like it has paid major, major dividends. Yelich has been spectacular. He's been great in the field, great at the plate. He's one of the getting into the point where you got to talk about him as an MVP candidate. So I wanted to talk to him about his All-Star experience and a few other things. He's got some pretty impressive athletic roots. His grandfather played in the great grandfather played in the NFL and actually designed the Los Angeles Rams logo on their helmet, if you can believe it. Now he didn't obviously he didn't know his great grandfather all that well growing up, but he definitely comes from a long line of athletic talent. So chatted about a number of topics with him. Give a listen to my conversation with Brewers All-Star outfielder Christian Yelich. My guest is Christian Yelich, outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers, All-Star outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. And we didn't. There was so much going on after the game. We didn't actually talk about the All-Star game itself, where you hit a home run, second Brewer in franchise history to do that in an All-Star game. Where does that rank in terms of experiences you've had thus far? That's a pretty crazy moment.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. It was really cool. I think just playing in an All-Star game is one thing. Hitting a homer in it is completely different.
Yeah,
it was a really special moment for sure. I got to keep the ball, which is also pretty
That's
cool.
Right.
It landed in the bullpen, so
yeah.
Hit it in the right spot. But I really enjoyed those 2 days. It was a great experience, and it was everything that I thought it would be.
Did you imagine you would get multiple at-bats? I mean, did they give you a sense of
no,
how
I
you were
really
going to go in the sixth?
Didn't
Or?
really know until like a few innings before when we were going to
Sure.
go in. Talked to Dave Roberts a little bit about it. I think it was like right before the game started, like the first inning or something,
Yeah.
when he was thinking, so you could trying time, getting loose, and
yeah,
you know, do the best job you could to, you know, get warm and get out there.
Right. So the last, I think, it was actually kind of a surprise to me that you, this was a first time trip for the All-Star game. How close do you feel like you came the last couple of years? Was it a thought in your head these last couple seasons?
I mean, it is what it is.
Sure,
it's,
yeah.
You know, it's a lot of it's out of your control. I mean, you got to have a good season at the right time, I guess.
Right.
You know,
positions got to
It's just dependent on position and how other guys are doing. There's so many variables that go into it. And it's one of those things that that's why you appreciate it. So you never know how many you're going to get the opportunity to do. So it was special. You know, I really enjoyed my first trip out there. And, you know, hopefully you do it again one day.
The way the players' ballot works, do you get a sense just hearing buzz from other guys or even your own clubhouse that you'd be in consideration? I mean, I guess, like, I'm trying to figure how much of a surprise this was when they said.
Well, I mean, obviously it's a surprise. I mean, you don't expect it. That's
right.
For sure. You know, like I said, you never really know until you know.
Yeah.
So.
The lost ball in the lights. Did Felipe Vázquez say anything to you after that?
I mean, he asked me why I didn't dive. I told him I lost in the lights.
Yeah. But, All right.
I mean, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
It's what it is on that one.
So. I mean, just as a defensive player in general, you've obviously had, I mean, at least from the outside perspective, had a very good season. How much of that has been always part of your game? How much has evolved as you've gotten, you know, deeper in the big league career, the defensive expertise you have in multiple positions in the outfield, too?
Yeah, just experience over time, I'd say.
Sure.
Just trying to learn the position, or positions, I guess you could say. Right field has been new to me this year. I've never done it before. But, yeah, you're always trying to improve every year. There's a lot of work that goes into it from a lot of different people. It's something I had to learn in pro ball, and I'm still working at today.
Before the All-Star game, there was a press conference, and somebody asked you about the home run derby, and there was a hesitance. And I'm just curious, you or players in general, are players kind of souring on the home run derby? It seems like the type of thing that maybe isn't as cool for a lot of players as maybe it used to be.
No, I would, if I had the opportunity to play another All-Star game, I would probably love to do the home run derby, actually.
Oh, okay.
You know, this time I was probably more inclined not to do it just because I'd never experienced an All-Star game before.
Yeah.
I really wanted to just take in the couple days without the, you know, added pressure. Or I didn't really know how the schedule, you know.
Right.
I didn't,
yeah,
it was all new
fair,
to me. So
sure.
I figured, you know, first one, it was – I mean, I didn't even know if they were going to ask me or not. But
right.
Just like as your first one, it would be – you know, I just wanted to enjoy the whole experience in general. Like I said, if I got a chance to do it again, it'd be something
sure.
that – if everything was right, that I'd probably consider doing it if they'd have me. But it's a cool event, man. I mean, I think a lot of guys in baseball probably grew up watching that event. And, it's definitely unique. It looks tiring for sure.
Yeah.
It's, you probably take more swings in that thing than you do on any day throughout
right.
the season.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, obviously I've never done it, so I can't fully speak on it. But I feel like people think it changes their swing. I think just the amount of swings you take in a day probably takes more time to recover from than
right.
actually changing your swing. I think that's probably the thing.
Yeah, for sure.
That, you know, some guys are hesitant to do on it. And it's different for everybody, you know. There's, you know, 100 games into the season is basically the All-Star break, and guys are dealing with different
right.
injuries.
Right, they're already
banged up. Yeah, so it's all case-dependent. Guys just sometimes don't do it just not because they don't want to. It's just because
right.
they just can't do it. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into it.
So, flashing back before your Brewers days, the Marlins, you gave a really good interview to Barstool about experiences around the death of Jose Fernandez and sort of what it was like in the Miami environment after that. I want to specifically, the game where D. Gordon hits the home run,
mm-hmm.
what do you remember about that day? Where were you when he hit that home run? That just is such a magical baseball moment.
Yeah.
What do you remember from that?
I was just talking to the Barstool guys about it. You know, I didn't really realize probably how much traction that was going to get at the time.
Really?
I mean, I was talking to him. I was basically just – it felt like I was telling him a story.
Chatting.
Yeah, we were just talking, like, you know, amongst friends. I'd known those guys for a decent amount of time. So, you know, you almost forgot the fact that you're doing an interview and a podcast. It was more of just like a storytelling moment.
Sure.
And, you know, I probably would have – if I really knew how much traction it would have gone into, I probably would have gotten a little bit more, like, in-depth about the kind of guy Jose was and, like, how – you know, great of a player, friend, teammate that he was. Obviously, all the stuff that came out after, people all have their differing opinions
right.
on it, but
right.
no one really got to know him at the personal level that most of the guys in that clubhouse did, and like, how big of a heart he had and how big of a competitor he was out on the field. And, It's a huge loss anytime something like that happens, as far as, you know, anytime you lose a friend or a teammate, obviously it's a big loss for the organization, like I kind of touched on. But Dee Gordon Tomer was pretty special. I mean, there's a lot that went into that. There's a lot of emotion those 2 days. Mm-hmm. I think you kind of see it if you ever watch that video back.
Oh, yeah, but, that's crazy.
Yeah, I was on the steps, like top steps, so I had a pretty good view. It was perfect sight line, and it's one of those things where you're just like, yeah, you just knew as soon as he hit it that it was gone, which you know, Dee Gordon hit a whole lot of no doubt homers.
Right. So, very few.
You know, that was probably the only one he's had in his whole career, no doubter. But
yeah.
It was a special moment. It's one of those that I think when it's looked back upon in 10, 15, 20 years, however, you know, whenever people are looking back, as far as iconic baseball moments, that'll be one that's replayed for a while, and rightfully so, just because of the circumstances. And everything that meant in that week was obviously pretty crazy, as far as just emotions and, you know, funeral and playing the games that we still had to play out, which was tough, obviously. But, yeah, you know, he's a great guy. He's a great competitor, great teammate, great baseball player. And, I think everybody definitely still misses him to today.
Yeah. How do you look back on those last few months in Miami? Probably knew that you were going to be moved or wanted to be moved. Like, how do you look back on that time?
I mean, I look back in my time, like, you know, I look back on it fondly, those times. I mean, it was, you know, where I got my chance to play in the big leagues, the opportunity. I made some great friends there. I have a lot of friends there that I'll have for the rest of my life. Some of my closest friends in the game or in life are, you know, still playing on that team.
For sure.
Or throughout the league. But, you know, it's, at the end of the day, like, you know, like I said before, it's a business for these teams and for us as well. So things happen, you know, trades happen. You don't win. Obviously, you got to make changes. And that's kind of what happened over there for us. And, you know, I don't think there's any hard feelings or any animosity between anybody as far as the direction it went. It's just one of those things where, you know, sometimes it's just time to move on.
Yeah. You have a pretty good, a lot of athletics in your family. Your great-grandpa, and we wrote this a while back about his history in the NFL and designing the Rams helmet back in the day. I imagine you didn't know a lot about that growing up, but how much were you aware of that? Was it something you guys talked about?
I mean, it'd come up every now and then in passing amongst family members, but I don't really remember a whole lot about it. I know that it did happen. I know that much, but it's kind of a cool fun fact, I guess you could say. It's unique for sure, but you know, like I said, I don't know a ton about it.
Your brother Cameron in the Marines, how often do you get to see him?
Probably 10 days a year max. When he comes home for leave in the off season usually. If he comes home in the off season, sometimes it just depends when he gets the time off,
but,
not very often. But yeah, it's part of what it's like to have a military family member. You know, you kind of get to see what military families deal with all the time, and you know, obviously thankful for not only his service, but, you know, everybody's service out there, and it makes you appreciate that stuff a little bit more.
Yeah, they show, you know, even at the All-Star game, they had another one of those unplanned reunions, or where they surprised the family. And I can't watch them without getting choked up, and you actually know kind of what that's like. When you got to play at Fort Bragg a couple years ago with the Marlins, that was a pretty special moment too, I imagine, for you, given that you had the family connection.
It was just it was a cool game. It was a really neat game. Something that I think all the guys on both sides, on both teams, really appreciated it and took in the experience, and probably wish that it had happened more often.
Kind
of wish it would be an annual event, because it was so awesome and unique atmosphere as far as just military families and and members in attendance only on a military basis. You know, pretty special, and everything went real smooth, and it was really, really cool. Just hanging out on the base with the men and women before the game and doing the whole tour and all that. It was special. It was definitely one of my favorite games I've played. It was a great experience all around.
Cool. All right, so last one. People who watch Saturday Night Live know the comedian Pete Davidson. Yeah. And I don't know, when did you first become aware of him, and do you agree that he looks like you, or is that something you...
I think I was doing an intentional talk interview. I don't remember when. It was 2015 maybe?
Sure.
Maybe earlier than that? I don't know. Somewhere around there. And we were talking about something, and he came up, and then me and him got to talking, and he ended up coming out, and we played the Mets. one time.
I remember seeing that picture both of you guys in jerseys.
And then we, you know, have kept in touch ever since then.
That's cool.
I don't know. I feel like we both kind of feel like there's a semi-resemblance, but not
not what other people see.
An identical twin type deal.
Right.
But yeah, it's kind of just been one of those things over the years that people like to mention and that we both hear on a daily basis or all the time. Obviously, he's doing really well in life right now.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, so you're happy
but
to see
you guys
see
are
that.
Both, I hope, keep doing okay.
Yeah, you know, it's good to see. And, you know, it's cool to keep in touch and definitely had a good time out there.
Yeah. All right. Christian Yelich out for the Milwaukee Brewers. Thank you, sir.
You got it, man.
That's all for today with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. We turn our attention to the second leg of this West Coast road trip. Four more games coming against the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's a team that obviously was just at Miller Park. The Brewers dropped 2 of 3 in the wake of the Manny Machado acquisition that the Dodgers made, a player that the Brewers were very much after. So the Dodgers came in, did take 2 of 3. Now the Brewers go to, you know, Chavez Ravine to try and see what they can do in a four-game series. After that, they return home, still very much a playoff team, as we've mentioned, and in the mix of things here. 2 days away as well from the trade deadline. We'll see if the Brewers make one more or two, maybe big acquisitions, having already made a couple moves to bolster their roster before the home stretch. 2 months to go, and absolutely a team in the playoff mix. Again, for Tom Hodricourt, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. Thanks for listening to the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. We'll catch you again next week.